Hello and welcome, Breakthrough Success listeners. I'm your host, Mark Guberti, and this is the podcast where you'll learn how to achieve the breakthroughs you've been looking for in your business and life. If you want to grow your content brand, you'll definitely want to add my latest book, Content Marketing Secrets, to your reading list. This book will teach you how to create, promote, and optimize your content for growth and revenue. You can get your copy at Mark Guberti, that is Mark with a C, so markguberti.com/book. And now, let's dive right into the show. Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Guberti, and this is the podcast for entrepreneurs who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. Fear, stress, and anxiety are never really depicted as good things to have. While they're bad if we harbor onto them for too long, we can leverage these three emotions to accomplish our goals. You'll learn exactly how to do that in moments where you have fear, stress, and anxiety in this episode. Today's guest is a Marine veteran, speaker, author, adventurer, and entrepreneur dedicated to helping others turn their fear into their greatest ally so they can accomplish their biggest goals and dreams. He's the author of the book Fearvana, the revolutionary science of how to turn fear into health, wealth, and happiness. It's received a lot of praise, including from the Dalai Lama, who said the book inspires us to look beyond our own agonizing experiences and find the positive side of our fears. Today's guest for episode 103 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Akshay Nanavati. Akshay, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me here, Mark. Really appreciate it. Honored.
I am really looking forward to this conversation because normally when people think about fear, stress, and anxiety, it's really bad thoughts like get me out of here as soon as possible. Then boom, Fearvana. So before we go into that, can you just provide some backstory of how you discovered the concept?
Sure. My journey into this concept of Fearvana been filled with ups, lots, ups and downs. It actually started kind of in high school. So I think a little bit younger than where you are. And when I moved from India to Singapore to Austin, Texas, when I moved over, I got into drugs pretty heavily for a little while, for about a year and a half. I lost two friends to drug addiction. And I myself was very much headed down that path. But thankfully, I got out. I joined the Marines. I spent 6 years in the Marines. And when I got into the Marines, I started finding value in engaging fear, value in stress, value in pushing my own limitations. And so I started looking for other ways to do that. I went mountain climbing, rock climbing, ice diving, ice climbing. I mean, you kind of name it. Like, nature became my playground to explore my own limitations. And then in 2007, I was deployed to Iraq, which, as you can imagine, that was scary and stressful. But once again, I found growth through that experience. And mine was a particularly challenging one. I was an infantry Marine in Iraq. Like, one of my jobs was actually to walk out in front of our vehicle convoys to look for improvised explosive devices before they could be used to blow up our vehicles. So somewhat scary.
Wow.
But learned to find the value in fear out there. But when I came back, I experienced my greatest challenge really soon after coming back. I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. I hit a low point, struggled with alcohol. I hit a point finally where I actually woke up after just, you know, binge drinking, thinking to myself that there's no point going on. And that moment is when I realized something really needed to change. And so I started researching neuroscience, psychology, spirituality, going to do a lot of personal growth work. And it led me ultimately to this concept of Fearvana, because I realized in my own life, you know, looking back at my life and where I was at the time, that everything worthwhile was as a result of fear, stress, anxiety. And these were not negative emotions. It's the demonization of the emotions that cause us more problems, not the emotions themselves. And so I created the concept of Fearvana to help people reframe their relationships to these emotions and ultimately find value in them, because they can be our greatest barriers. And often for most people, they are, but they can also be our greatest sources of strength when learned how to use properly. So that's what kind of led me to Fearvana. And now the long, long, long journey it took me to write the book as well.
As you were talking about your story, I mean, you mentioned drugs, you mentioned post-traumatic stress disorder and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And listening to you, like, I would never think any of that. And how are you able to get out of that? I mean, like, the drugs alone, like, if you get on one of them, it seems like that's your, like, you need that in order to feel complete, like, for some people. Yeah. Really deep into that. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that, like, the listeners are on drugs. Like, I know a lot of people listening may not be in that situation, but in any type of situation where it feels like something's gripping you, how do you get out of it?
You know, with the drugs, it was kind of an almost overnight, got out, decided to join the Marines. Like, having a strong enough why is essential. You know, when you get out of any kind of addiction or any real, I think, struggle, you need a, what I call a worthy struggle to channel that energy into. So that's actually how I define Firvana. I call it the bliss that results from engaging our fears to pursue our own worthy struggle. So everybody's got their own worthy struggle, right? It could be writing a book, building a business, raising a child, playing chess, writing movies. It could be anything. But when you find that path, it will be hard. But that's not a bad thing. There's gifts in those challenges. So many people, like I said, I lost friends to drug addiction. I've lost friends to alcohol addiction. I've lost, I know friends who are still struggling with PTSD. And when all of these things hit, if you don't, if in order to get out of them, you don't just leave a void. Like many of my friends who ultimately passed away from addiction, they were going through rehab. Some of them were struggling, but there was a void left there. And if they don't fill that with the worthy struggle, with some sort of meaningful challenge, you slip back into it. So having that strong enough why, having clarity on your path. And a big one is actually, especially when I got out of alcohol, I was much more self-aware and learned a lot more of the stuff that I know now that, you know, in the high school, I sort of just didn't know it. I just realized I wanted to join the Marines and, you know, it just sort of led me to it. Now I have more clarity on like the hows if it all happened, the whys it happened. But one of the big ones is disassociating yourself from the identity of that struggle. So when we struggle with alcohol, we're like, I'm an alcoholic. Or when people struggle with depression, it's like, I have depression or I am depressed. And that becomes a part of their self-identity. And that's really, really damaging. That fuels people into this downward spiral of hatred, of anger, of self-talk, of, you know, self-loathing. And I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen with myself. You know, even when I was diagnosed with PTSD, I came to realize that the symptoms of post-traumatic stress are not indicative of a disorder. They're very normal human responses to war. So by disassociating myself from the sort of the disorder or from the problem itself, I realize that that's not me. It's not a part of my self-identity. I am something more. And realizing that my brain has just been stuck in a pattern that I am not in control of. Our subconscious runs most of our lives. But by recognizing that, by accepting this, you know, our lack of free will, if you will, that's what actually I call it, they call it the myth of free will. By accepting it to the degree to which our subconscious runs our lives, then I can say, okay, that's not me. But you know what? Now that I acknowledge that, now I can do something else because now I've created that space between the stimulus of my subconscious patterns and my conscious response to it. And in that space, I can choose to fill it with the worthy struggle.
I do love the idea of giving yourself a why for action, whether it be like accomplishing a goal or getting out of something as serious as drugs, alcohol, or post-traumatic stress. And one of the things that when I first came across Firvana, I mean, it's something so different. Like, you never really hear anyone talking about how fear, stress, and anxiety can help you get towards your goals. I mean, it's so different.
Right, yeah.
And one of the things that I was thinking is, like, if you're in fear, stress, and anxiety all the time, like, I don't know how much fun that can be, but at the same time, I see the logic of how Firvana can be useful. So is there a way to find that sweet spot where you're able to use fear, stress, and anxiety to help you, but they're not like the status quo of your life?
Yeah, no, great question and totally get you. I actually call it the zone of Firvana. So it's the balance between the level of fear and the level of training you have to prepare for the activity. So if you go too far, then it can be paralyzing. It can be too much, right? Like, it pushes you and it can either be paralyzing or you don't kind of do anything about it and it's overwhelming. I mean, even with post-traumatic stress, for example, if you're immersed in it 24/7, that can be challenging. But for most people, it's actually just post-traumatic stress, not post-traumatic stress disorder. But same thing with fear, with stress. If it's too much, it can be, you know, like, it can be debilitating, damaging, as opposed to useful. So you got to find that right sweet spot, because on the flip side of that, if you don't do anything, if there's no fear, no stress in your life, you're really not growing. You need fear to grow, because what you need, risk to advance, to evolve into something new, right? And with risk comes fear. So I'm always looking for ways to experience that. So I'll give you an example. Just yesterday, I had a pretty brutal workout. At the end of my workout was 50, like, this was after the whole workout, it was 50 burpees and then running up 19 floors, like, as a finisher. And so the whole workout, I'm like dreading these two things because I know they're coming. There's fear, there's anxiety about how painful it's going to be. And when you're in it, it's definitely very stressful. Yeah. But there's value in that. Like, right? Like, I mean, the body grows through stress. You have to stress your muscles out in order for them to recover and then grow. And it's the same thing with the mind and the spirit. So that sweet spot is kind of up to you to decide. Like, I mean, I wouldn't say decide, but up to you to figure out. You experiment and you find out. Like, I wasn't always like this, Mark. I mean, I used to be terrified of Ferris wheels when I was a little bit younger than you. You know, when I was like younger, I was terrified of Ferris wheels. I was terrified of everything. You know, I then went bungee jumping in New Zealand, and slowly I kind of worked my way up the ladder of risk, worked up my way, engaging fear one step at a time to eventually, I used to free solo up rock walls, like climb 60, 70 rock walls with no rope, you know, and then go to Iraq as an infantry Marine. And even out there, like my level of fear that I felt was a little bit less than many others. And I know for a fact, because a few people in our same squads, we'd come back from mission, they'd feel a lot more heightened, like fear levels and stress levels, but I didn't, because I had built a little bit of a tolerance, like the line of risk for me, the line of fear, it took a little bit more for me to engage that level of fear. So you kind of build it up one step at a time. And initially, if you're very, very new to this experience of Fearvana, to engaging your fears, you just practice, put yourself in on those situations and, you know, lower the risks. So you're not climbing up rock walls with no rope, but do something that's like a little less risky, figure out where you are in that. And that requires a high level of self-awareness. You know, once you're in it, notice the experience, process it, reflect on it, activate awareness into the experience, and then see, was that too much? Was that not enough? And then slowly you discover that line. And the better you get at it, the more you will get clear on how to keep pushing into it. So now I'm like very clear as to what it will take for me to feel fear or stress in anything I do, in almost anything. But I've developed that ability, that self-awareness to know where my zone of Fearvana stands as a result of constant practice. It doesn't just stop one day, and that line will keep growing. Your comfort zone will keep expanding, or I call it your zone of Fearvana will keep expanding as you keep evolving and keep growing and keep taking more risks.
And I mean, when as you do take more risk, you do get more comfortable with it. And risk taking is part of the entrepreneurial game. And there are many entrepreneurs listening to this right now. And I love the concept of Fearvana. Like, you take risks and then that expands your ability to take risks, and you use fear, stress, and anxiety to help you grow. But how can we apply this to the goals that we currently have? Like, let's say there's someone listening to this who wants to write a book. Mm-hmm. How would you use Fearvana to you speed up the process, come out with a more effective book, and things like
that? Yeah. Got you. So a very first step is like actually not trying to fight the fear that shows up and being okay with it, accepting that the fear is there. Like, I'll give you an example. I worked with this guy who once told me, "I'm just waiting for the fear to go away so I can quit my job to start my business." And I said, "That's your problem. You're waiting for the fear to go away. It won't, you know, because we live in a world that says, be fearless, don't be scared of anything." And so what happens is when fear does shows up, it fuels into this downward spiral of, oh, there's something wrong with me for feeling fear. So whenever you feel fear, however you feel it, it's okay. Like, be with the fear, be present to it, acknowledge it, accept that it's there. And then isolate yourself from the fear to understand it. So even while writing my own book, I was terrified, even though I'm writing a book about fear, but I was terrified because I was terrified of writing a bad book. Like, is this going to be any good? Are people going to like it? Is it going to be garbage? Or am I eventually going to get one of those 1-star reviews on Amazon? So all that stuff was there, right? So, but I wasn't trying to fight it or resist it, because that only makes it worse. By accepting it, I said, okay, I'm scared. What can I do? So I isolate yourself from your fear. You ask yourself questions. What am I afraid of? What's the worst case scenario if that fear shows up? What can I do to prepare for that worst case scenario? So I always like to say fear propels you to prepare if you allow it to, like if you leverage it and use it, if you, instead of trying to fight it. So that fear was there. I allowed it to leverage me, like to help me prepare better. As a result, I must have trashed about 100,000 words worth of work, but I wrote a far better book. And like now it's one that I'm truly, truly proud of. You know what I mean? Like you said, it goes in, I got the foreword written for my book from the Dalai Lama, and that would not have happened without the fear of writing a bad book. So the fear was a good thing. I was able to isolate myself from it, to understand it. And then you seek out people who have achieved mastery in that area. So I went to mentors like Jack Canfield, the author of the Chicken Soup of the Soul series, Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Workweek, studied what they did. How did they do it? And as a result, I wrote a better book, right? So, but isolating myself from a fear, then leveraging the energy of the fear into action. So one of the things you can do is actually visualize yourself experiencing the process, facing the obstacle and rising above it. often people will say in the sort of law of attraction space that you should visualize yourself all successful and happy, like, you know, visualize yourself walking across stage with the New York Times bestseller or whatever it may be. But it's far more valuable to actually visualize the obstacles in your way. And plenty of research has shown this, instead of visualizing yourself on the other side of the obstacle, because that will allow you to better prepare for that obstacle when it shows up. So, like, even again, another example, Michael Phelps used to visualize himself swimming what he called a perfect stroke. So when his goggles got flooded in 2008, he kept swimming and still won Olympic gold, but he didn't visualize himself on the podium, right? Like, he visualized himself in the process. And that's what I used to do, is visualize myself writing, navigating that moment when inevitably you're staring at a computer screen and nothing's coming out, right? So, but facing that, and you have to just go through it. Like, ultimately, it comes down to, you have to just embrace the challenge and accept that it's not going to be easy, but nothing worthwhile ever is. Like, the greatest gifts in life are challenging. So don't expect it to be easy, and don't look for easy. If you look for easy, life will be hard. If you look for a meaningful challenge, life will become easier.
And again, this is a different idea that you don't normally hear. Like, almost every book that I read is like, have the vision and focus on when you're on that stage or when you have that best-selling mm-hmm. book. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I mean, focusing on the obstacles, it prepares you for exactly. doing the type of work that leads you to that stage or leads you to that best-selling status.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is such always an amazing one.
Thank you. No, you always want that vision in the back of your mind, but that shouldn't be your main, like have 10% of your energy on that vision where it's going, but 90% focus on the process, on the systems, on like engaging the step-by-step process it takes to get there. Because the thing is, when you get to end goal, you're going to find another goal to work towards, right? Like, this is sort of the myth of happiness that we all think, okay, if I make $1 million, get the dream house, get the car, then I'll be happy. But the thing is, you won't. You're going to struggle in new ways, you know? And that's not a bad thing. Again, like, progress is not the elimination of problems. It's the creation of new problems. And you always want new problems to address. That's how you keep growing, because the growth is on the other side of those problems.
I absolutely love that idea. That's similar to something Grant Cardone says a lot, that it's good to have more problems because that means you're doing more things. And
mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes sense that you want to have more problems. It sounds like why would I want problems? But it shows that you're making progress, and having that mentality where you envision the work you're going to have to do, that's going to get you to what you want to achieve. But you don't want to paint too like a bleak of a view either, in a sense where like fear, stress, and anxiety, obviously too much can be really bad, but mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. how are we able to find bliss as we mm-hmm. utilize the Fearvana concept?
Sure. So so as you engage this, and as you find your worthy struggle, the process itself becomes enjoyable. Like I was mentioning, I just did my 50 burpees running up 19 floors. Like, I love doing that. I absolutely love it. I love engaging some sort of, you know, that fear thing on a regular basis. And it becomes blissful, because as you achieve things, as you grow as a person, then achievement itself becomes the reward. Like, the process of daily achievement becomes the reward, and you start finding value in that. And neuroscience has also shown that this experience of Fearvana releases all kinds of chemicals. Like, when you engage novelty, when you do hard things and risky things, it releases dopamine in the brain, which is a joy hormone. It releases a hormone called anandamide, which comes from the Sanskrit word anand, which literally means bliss. So Fearvana is a direct access point to bliss. But again, you have to allow yourself to experience that. Literally, our beliefs on fears and beliefs on stress will allow us to feel it differently. And they've done plenty of studies where shown with people with equally high levels of cortisol, which is the stress hormone, will go into a test, but the group that believes that they're awful at math and they get and they stress out over that stress, they perform worse. Whereas the group that is feeling the stress, but they don't stress out over that feeling of stress, they perform better, because they don't, again, high performers don't stress out over stress. High performers don't fear fear. So accepting it, allowing yourself to celebrate in it, to enjoy the process. So athletes feel fear every time before they step on their respective battlefields, yes, you know? Definitely. And like I've Bruce Springsteen throws up before concerts, and he's the boss, man. Like, so he still feels it. So kind of one is getting used to it. Then you'll still fall in love with it. Like, another great quote, actually, Arnold Schwarzenegger says that I don't like pain just for the sake of pain. I forget exactly how, but he says, I don't like sticking needles in my arm. I like the pain that is necessary to be a champion. So for him, being a champion meant bodybuilding. Like, that's his pain that he enjoys, he loves. And as he grows, as he finds accomplishment, as he sees his body grow and evolve, he finds rewards in that. And then it's also about stopping to celebrate the wins, right? Like, so in my little workout system, after every workout, after every run, I actually have a little note and a reminder to say, acknowledge yourself for your effort and result. So like celebrating the little win, celebrating that you took this effort today, not, you know, and that becomes fuel to keep going, to keep going. Cause I mean, like working out, you're not going to see results overnight, right? Like, I mean, I work out pretty hard and I'm still got a little bit of fat I'm trying to get rid of. So you know, you got to celebrate the process instead of just getting focused on the result. Otherwise it's easy to get, it's the same thing writing a book. I mean, writing a 70,000 word book, it's basically a collection of putting one word together for 70,000+ words, right? It doesn't just happen. So you have to enjoy the process a little bit and learn to find joy in it. So when you immerse yourself in that fear and then you silence it with action, that it fuels itself into this like rewarding cycle instead of like a beating yourself up and, you know, a downward spiral. It becomes an upward spiral of accomplishment.
And I mean, with that upward spiral of accomplishment, it's from all of that pain that you get. I mean, the 50 burpees, like I'm sure you were definitely dreading it, but you definitely felt like a king afterwards.
Right?
And I could relate because I do like runs every day. So like, you're the happiest moments when you're done with it.
Yeah.
But like leading up to it is like this type of barrier that is between you and the goal. And when you are at that point, like 50 burpees, and this could be any goal, but we'll use the 50 burpees example. You could just like walk out and say, I'm not doing my burpees. I did a good workout. Mm-hmm. I got a lot in.
Mm-hmm.
How do we cross that barrier from like, this is a really hard goal, and then like actually jumping over that barrier and then actually taking action, actually doing those 50 burpees or whatever it is?
Love it. Great question. It's really building the habit. The single most important habit to cultivate is willpower. And this is kind of something unique because, again, you don't see a lot of people talk about it because willpower is essentially, it's inevitably not a habit. Like a habit is something automated. Willpower is a conscious effort, but you can habituate that conscious effort, right? And in fact, Charles Duhigg, the author of The Power of Habit, does say willpower is the most important keystone habit. A keystone habit is any habit that then like sort of snowball effect into all other habits in your lives. So when you cultivate the habit of willpower, you exercise it, you engage it regularly, and you get to that point, the more you get to this point where one party wants to quit and the other wants to fight, and the more you don't quit and you fight, the more you make that a normal part of your life. So like going into, you know, at the whole workout, I did like a 2.5 mile warm-up run. I was doing the whole workout before the 50 burpees. I knew this was coming. And like you said, it's easy. I could have just stopped. I could have not run up the 19th floors. And then after the 50 burpees, I knew I had this planned workout. So if I plan it, the more I plan and finish what I plan, the more I get used to that sense of who I am, right? Like, now that becomes, so one, you also get better at planning because it's, if you plan something that you're not ready for, and I've had moments in the past where I've planned this workout that's just maybe too much, or I didn't have enough time to finish it because I had to be somewhere. And then I adapt. Okay. What went wrong here, right? Like, what did I notice? So when, the more you practice the self-awareness, I call it the action awareness cycle. You exercise awareness, you take action, you gain awareness from that action, and you take action again. It's like fuels itself in a cycle. The more you exercise that awareness into your action, the better you'll be able to plan. And then every time you finish the plan, despite how hard it may be, then you build that self into yourself. Like that becomes a part of your self-identity, that I am this warrior that will finish what I start. So even if I have the 50 burpees, it's easy to not do it, to like, you know, I'm done. And my other part of my workout was pretty challenging in its own right. So I could have easily been like, okay, this is enough, right? Like, but setting that standard of who I want to be, who I am, and constantly building that, the more I do it. So today, again, doing it yesterday makes it that much easier for me to do it again today. You know what I mean? So it's about building that willpower habit. I actually call it building a positive relationship to suffering. This is the single most important skill you can develop in life. The faster, the stronger you build a positive relationship to suffering, the better you will succeed at life, because life is going to punch you in the face whether you like it or not. If you learn how to suffer well, you'll be able to smile through that suffering. And at the same time, any goal you want to work toward will be challenging. Any worthwhile goal is going to be hard. And if you know how to smile in the face of the suffering required to get there, the suffering itself becomes enjoyable, and the process and the end result that you will achieve all becomes enjoyable. This is not just something I came up with. Like the largest research on happiness actually concluded the same thing, that said, of all the virtues we can learn, no trait is more useful more essential for survival, and more likely to improve the quality of our lives than the ability to transform adversity into an enjoyable challenge. And I just put it differently. I like to say developing a positive relationship to suffering.
And I see this in play with some of the most successful people. Like one person who dished out a lot of punches was Muhammad Ali. And I recently did an episode where someone told me this. So this is not like I knew this on my own. But he was once interviewed and he says, the person asked him, how many crunches do you do? Like, and he says, he said something like, I don't really count them. I only count them when they actually start to hurt. So
the fact I love that.
Yeah, I mean, he and you are on like the similar psyche there where that you connected the pain to, okay, this is when it matters. This is important for me in order to develop my skills. So this is definitely something very important, being able to see the pain and realize this is going to help me and have a positive connection with it. And I feel like that holds a lot of people back from reaching their full potential. And I'm wondering if you know of anything else that you believe holds people back from reaching their potential.
No, I mean, part of it definitely is like a huge thing is the demonization of these emotions. So again, when you hear fear, stress, anxiety, pain, struggle, adversity, these words have a very negative connotation. Like it makes it sound like that's a tough existence, but it's not. Like they can, like if in my mind, when I hear them, it's like, oh, that's awesome. You know what I mean? It's just practicing and reframing that mindset around it is a huge barrier to overcome. Another thing is, you know, as we're living in a world that fuels, that's looking for instant gratification, we get it for the small things, right? Like right now I can put on my phone and get an answer to any question in the world, right? I can watch movies on my phone instantly. I can get something on Amazon and get it within a day and a half to my house, you know? So we live in a world that fuels the cycle of instant gratification. And also that, like we live in a world that's constantly trying to make our lives easier. Like every new piece of technology is designed to make our lives easier, and easier is not better. Like easier is absolutely not better. And we see that, like that's why our lives are getting worse. I mean, depression rates are rising, obesity rates, suicide rates, like all of this is making worse because easier is not better if we find that meaningful struggle. So cultivating the habit of actually separating ourselves from our environment and then finding value in struggle. So surround yourself with references that have you like find value in struggle, that change your relationship to it. So for example, I actually have this poster up on my wall, on my gym, that says during a workout, you should think four things. I'm not going to make it. I want to quit. I'm going to die if I keep going. I'd rather die than finish this. And then at the bottom, it says, are you working hard enough? So like this is a constant reminder, and surrounding yourself with those kind of references will allow you to reframe your relationship to struggle, to suffering, and find it as something enjoyable. And just a small little like tip in terms of when you're in the emotion, I get it that it's hard to like not get immersed in it and not let yourself be consumed by the emotion. So simple little things you can do in terms of tangible practices is actually label the emotion. So I'm feeling scared, I'm feeling anxious. And I've done this work with people with severe anxiety disorder, people with PTSD, all kinds of stuff. And simply by labeling the emotion, neuroscience has actually shown it reduces activity in the emotional parts of your brain and increases activity in the parts of your brain related to focus and awareness. So that allows you to not get consumed by the emotion. So you can label the emotion, shift your body language, ask yourself, I actually have this little tool called LMNOP. So label and language. The M is meaning. What is the meaning behind the emotion and the event that's causing you this? So like if you're feeling anxious from writing, the meaning is, maybe people won't want to buy my book and it'll be garbage. Then I can go to the end step, which is it's not me. So you're actually acknowledging this is not me. This is just my brain stuck in my pattern, but I am not my brain and my brain is not me, right? Like my brain is just stuck in this pattern. And again, neuroscience has shown we don't control what first shows up in our brain. We're just kind of at the effect of our subconscious. So this step is a fundamental part. It's really saying I am not this brain that's, you know, the pattern of my brain. I'm something more than that. And then the O is opt for a new meaning. And you can say that, I'm afraid of writing a bad book because I care about this book. Like if I was just wanting to put out a garbage book, I wouldn't have felt scared, right? Like if I just needed a book to have a book. So changing the meaning to the emotion and to the event itself. And finally, P is purpose. So you take some action in line with that purpose that you, you know, your higher purpose. And when you take action, when you say, so every time fear shows up, I actually go through this 5-step process a lot faster now. So I label the emotion and I immediately take purpose. I'm actually rewiring my brain. So my brain's learned to saying, instead of fear equals, you know, retreat and watch a movie. Like, for example, I had a client who that every time he had severe anxiety, he would just go watch TV. Instead of that, now my brain's saying, oh, anxiety equals action, right? Like, it's building a new brain wiring that allows you to build new habits ultimately. So that's P. And the final part of that P is preemptive strikes, which is what I call preemptive strikes, is where you preemptively prepare for obstacles you know will show up. So again, as you exercise self-awareness, you know that if I do X thing, an obstacle will show up, and you can preemptively get ready for it. And studies have shown if you plan ahead of time exactly how you're going to do something, what you're going to do, specifically how you're going to do it, you're 3 times more likely to succeed. So I've actually done this plenty of times. Like if I wake up, once I had 2 client calls, and I was really tired after that. I hadn't slept much, but I had a 5-mile run scheduled. So I knew I'd be tired. So to preemptively prepare for that obstacle of fatigue, I put on my running watch, I put on my shoes, my running outfit, my iPod around my arm, and was like ready to go for a run. So after my client calls, I made it as psychologically easy as possible to step out the door. And the more you practice this LMNOP tool, like, I cannot stress how invaluable it is. Like, each one of those steps is based on research. It works. I've worked using my own life consistently, and it's worked for people with like severe psychological issues. Because the real problem is never those psychological issues. It's the self-talk that follows it that is the real challenge.
Wow, that was very powerful. I mean, I will totally steal that idea of dressing my running gear before a run, like if I'm tired. And I would like to go back to something you said earlier, though, about the instant gratification, which is so dominant in today's culture. It's why we check our email so often. It's why we scroll through our social media feeds. And it doesn't really feed into the big goal that you want. Like, you don't become a best-selling author by feeding on short-term gratification. So how are we able to not let instant gratification derail us from our bigger goals?
Yeah, it's definitely a monster challenge, this sort of constant checking of the phones. And initially, for most of it, it's become a habit pattern. And every time we do it, it has a little dopamine jolt. Like, so the joy hormone gets released in our brain. So breaking that habit is definitely, like, you can use the LMNOP tool. It's a practice to break that, cultivate this positive relationship to suffering. But one of the key things in what you're saying is to stay present to the time perspectives. So actually being very, very present to this future I want to create, immersing yourself in it. So it's actually called, so psychologists call it an immediate return environment versus a delayed return environment. So our brains are designed for an archaic world, like the survival world where our ancestors have to battle saber-tooth tigers and stuff like that. So we're constantly seeking this immediate gratification, which is why we spend money awfully. Most people have very bad money patterns. And I myself was there. I've only recently changed that. But like, we always like to spend money instantly because our brains are designed for a world where we didn't have to store. We killed food, killed an animal, we ate it. So there was no storing, there was no long-term. So thinking about that long-term, staying present to the fact that like suffer now equals success later, you know, so repeating that mantra, for example. And in order to do that, you need to have a clear enough why of what you're working towards. So having clarity of the picture, otherwise it's just like, it's near impossible if you don't have clarity on what you're working toward to sort of battle these patterns of instant gratification. And then setting up systems, you know, like having, so once you have the clarity, then you set up systems and processes. As I said, you focus on process and systems as opposed to the end result. So small example, when I wake up in the morning, I have an app on my phone that I use called Todoist, and I have turned near everything into a system. It's something I'm constantly refining, still building new systems. So for example, when I wake up in the morning, I know people say don't check your phone, but I'm pretty good at like not seeing my email and my WhatsApp and my Facebook and all that stuff. I immediately go to my phone to look at what is my morning ritual. So I go open up this app, morning ritual, and then it's a step-by-step system. So when I turn everything into a checklist, then I don't have to think. Everything in my life becomes a checklist that I just follow. So morning ritual for me is prayer, meditate, chant, play wake up music, 25 push-ups, brush teeth, roll, that's like a foam roller, and then review goals and detail plan for the day. So I wake up, I go to my system, I follow it, and then there's a next system for daily themes that I'm like continuously evolving. And I have a system for training, for example, running routine. Here it is. Be clear on the mileage range. play my activation trigger, run and have fun, be willing to adapt. Then I have a deactivation trigger, recovery drink. Then I have a stretching routine. Once again, it's a checklist of what that routine is. Then I have a log and celebrate routine. So it's a checklist for what I got to do. So everything becomes a systematized process. And what the value in doing this is then you don't have to think, and then you can save your willpower for when you need it most. So if you turn things to a system, then you allow yourself not to become a slave to your subconscious. And there's freedom in systems. There's freedom because then you can just surrender to the systems, and there's true freedom in that. You don't become a slave to your feelings, to your patterns, to your subconscious, and you can evolve for something beyond that. And then it also keeps me focused on reminding myself that the process is leading to something great. So it's a constant practice. It's a relentless practice with clarity of the mission, staying obsessed though. And I cannot stress this enough. We talk a lot about work-life balance and all of that. I know I'm throwing a lot at you. I love this topic clearly, as you can tell, hence the energy, but staying obsessed on the vision, like forget that idea of work-life balance. If you love what you do, everything will immerse yourself in that like umbrella of what you do. I talk about my work to my wife. We talk about it all the time and we love it because it's not like quote unquote work. It's like, it's my work. My work is my play. My play is my work. Like everything feeds into each other, you know, like the environment that I have around me, the friends that I start, the mastermind group, my business coach, like all of it. We love having these intense, deep conversations where we're learning, we're growing. That becomes playtime as well. So like stay obsessed on your mission. And in order to do that, you have to have clarity on what it is. So that's having the clarity, systematizing your life, and then staying obsessed on that is some steps to combat this sort of world that will feed this notion that you'll get instant happiness by doing little things, because you won't.
You've been throwing a lot of amazing information throughout this entire episode, and your book Fearvana, I mean, this is a really nice teaser you're giving to us for people who haven't read the book yet, but in addition to Fearvana, I'm wondering if you could share with us three great books that would help us up-level our businesses and or ourselves.
Absolutely. In reading Fearvana, I did a ton of research, read hundreds and hundreds of books. So I'm going to read a few that I'm going to share a few that like sort of the more recent ones. In terms of business, one of my absolute favorites is 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel, founder of PayPal. Awesome, awesome book. In terms of personal growth, like one of my recent ones that I loved was Peak, The Science of Expertise, Secrets of the New Science of Expertise by Anders Ericsson. That was a really, really good one in terms of sort of that self-evolution. And another one of my favorites, which I really, really enjoyed, and actually it was a great one that's very connected to the topic of Fearvana, is The Upside of Stress by Dr. Kelly McGonigal. And sort of a fourth bonus, if you will, is Jack Canfield's Success Principles. That's a really good one. It summarizes some great steps on sort of the path to success. And Jack is kind of one of my mentors as well. So those are just a few, but there was plenty that brought me to where I am today for sure.
All right, Breakthrough Success listeners, those book links and the show notes will be at marketbreak.com/E103. And we are going to flip the tables for this last portion of the episode. So I've been asking you a lot of questions throughout our episode and our time together. And I'm wondering, what is one question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Love that. What is one question we need to be asking ourselves? Oh, more awesome. Here's a good one, actually. How can I be wrong? Where are my belief systems not working? The willingness to adapt, the willingness to admit that this mental model, this pattern is not working, is foundational to growth. We all like to stay certain in our rightness. And believe me, I've been there. Like, I'm right. This is certain. This is correct. But what I'm always looking at is, where am I wrong in this? How am I wrong? How is this not working? How can I translate this? Like, you know, what is the gap in this? The more you're willing to approach, like get out of certainty and switch to a process of curiosity and be willing to be wrong, the more you'll find your next stage of your own growth. So that's an invaluable one that I've actually kind of learned from my business mentor that I put in my own words is, you know, questioning your own mental models. Because ultimately, one quick thing is we don't look at the world as the world. We look at the world through our lens of that world. But in order to recognize that, we have to realize there is a lens and be willing to question that lens. And when we can question that lens, we can create a new lens ultimately. And we want to keep creating new lenses. In order to do that, we have to be willing to accept that this lens might not be serving us. So how can this lens be wrong?
That is a great takeaway to take from this episode of the Breakthrough Success Podcast. And I love how, you're not assuming that everything you're doing is Correct. You're willing to question yourself. And by questioning yourself, you definitely do come up with better conclusions. Mm-hmm. Actually, I greatly appreciate you sharing that question and all of your great insights with the Breakthrough Success listeners.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me on the show, Mark. Really enjoyed our conversation.
It was a pleasure to have you on the show. And Breakthrough Success listeners, the next thing you need to do if you want to figure out how exactly you are going to use fear as an ally and utilize stress and anxiety in order to achieve your goals, definitely grab a copy of Akshay's book, Fearvana. And don't forget to leave a review for his book also, because reviews definitely help with spreading the word out for his book. I'd like to thank you again for taking the time to share all of your great insights with us. And Fearvana, if you want to like learn even more about everything we just talked about, that's the book you have to add to your reading list.
Thanks, Mark.
Breakthrough Success listeners, I need your help to keep this show running. I choose not to use sponsored ads in my episodes to provide you with a better experience. However, this decision gives me little money to pay for storage and my team, which comes over to over $1,000 per month. So please consider supporting the Breakthrough Success podcast on Patreon by heading over to patreon.com/MarkGuberti. For as little as $1 per month, you can help Breakthrough Success stay running while taking advantage of exclusive content and other perks that come with being a patron. To help support Breakthrough Success, head over to patreon.com/MarkGuberti or search for Breakthrough Success on Patreon. That way, I can maintain the Breakthrough Success podcast so it stays running and provide you with valuable episodes.